I'm an alcoholic. My name is Jenny.
Hi, Jenny.
My sobriety date is February 13th, 2002. My sponsor's name is Kathleen Eichenlaub, and Midtown is my home group, which meets in Kensington, Maryland on Sunday nights. I'm really grateful to be here. I love this. This is great for me, this little stand. I usually tiptoe when I'm up here because I'm 4 foot 11. So this is nice. And I'm really grateful to be here. I came to this group. I want to say it was probably like over 10 years ago when I was last here. And I first come when my sponsor at the time spoke here, different sponsor. And it like I always talk about, I was telling some of the ladies I came up with, like it's just such a like warm and welcoming AA group. And I always enjoy coming here when I can. It's just kind of far. So anyways, I'm gonna share in a general way what I was like, what happened and what it's like now. And I prayed, so to tell the truth, and that's what my sponsor tells me, to pray, tell the truth, and end on time. So that's what I'm gonna do. And yeah, I'm just really grateful to be here. I started drinking when I was 18. That's when I had my first The first time I remember getting drunk. And I feel like today, like most of the people I talked to started drinking a lot earlier than that. But that just wasn't my story. Growing up, I was a very timid person, timid kid, scared of my own shadow. I guess like today I would call it a lot of anxiety. I didn't know what to call it then. I just thought a lot all the time. And I didn't realize that that everybody didn't think a lot all the time. That's all I did was think though. Think, like just filled with like fears about not, I don't, I know, I never know where they really came from. I just, I know I grew up in a home where there was alcoholism, and I'm sure that may have had an impact on it, but aside from all of that, like my sister doesn't, I have a sister and she doesn't seem to, she was a pretty confident, like outgoing, easygoing person her whole life, but not me. I was just always afraid people, everybody's mad at me. Nobody likes me. Like just all these thoughts all the time, but they were only about myself, and they were never good. They were like never good. And from my earliest memories, I just remember we were actually talking in the car coming up here. That like even as a child, just worrying so much about everything. And it wasn't, I was not in a family where my family was putting these worries on me. I don't know why I worried. I think it was just that I thought so much. Like we would have like in school they would talk about what to do if a fire happens. And I would like lay up at night at 8 years old, just thinking about what am I going to do when the fire happens? Like who, where will I live? What if only my mom lives? What if, who do I save? Just like thinking like my whole life. And I let that continued into high school. I really thought that I didn't have any friends in high school. Looking back, I had friends in high school. This is like the story of my life. I was like probably around 10 years sober, but I remember saying to my sponsor, I had friends. Like up until 10 years sober, I was like, oh no, I didn't really have any friends. But I actually did. Like when you talk about, it's just that I did not connect with people. I didn't feel like people liked me. I like to stick to like really small groups. I'm still kind of like that now. But I can kind of push through that better than I used to. But overall, like I had a lot, like I said, a lot of drinking and drugs in my family, but a loving family. And if you have a family like that, you understand they're very loving. It's just that, this runs throughout my family. And I was, given everything I needed, given more than what I needed by my family. They loved me and took care of me. But I the words I have for it now are like nothing was ever enough. Like nothing, I never felt content. As long as I can remember, I didn't know what to call it then, but that's how I felt. Like, and our book talks about this, like, and people in the meetings talk a lot about this, like, spiritual, just this hole in the soul that we talk about. And I mean, I had that for a long time, but didn't know what it was. And, what happened for me is after like living, like, very tightly wound for a long time. I went off to college when I was 18, and I thought it was going to be a chance for me to suddenly become this very popular and confident woman, like young woman. I don't know why I thought that would happen just by moving somewhere, but I really did. But what I ended up doing was getting to college and crying for 2 weeks because I was scared. Like I didn't know how, at least I had friends that I knew or people that I was afraid of that I knew and my like where I lived before and at college it was just like I didn't know how to cope. And then finally my roommate was just in college was just like, why don't you come to a party with me? And I remember being like, is there going to be alcohol? And she's like, yeah, there's probably going to be beer there. She's like, you don't have to drink it. And she's like, we'll just come home. If you get too scared, we'll just come home. And I went to that party and it was a party in like a bunch of fraternities and there was a keg of beer and I got drunk. What realistically, objectively happened that night was I drank beer from a keg and I got drunk. What happened inside of me was that I had the best night in my entire life. The most magical, wonderful, like it was the best thing that had ever happened. Like if I felt like I felt better than I'd ever felt in my life up until that point at 18 years old. And but nothing really happened. Like it wasn't like something special happened. That was all that happened. I could look at people in the eye when I was talking. I wasn't thinking about myself. I wasn't sitting there thinking like I'm saying something stupid. I'm ugly. I'm like all this stuff. It just shut up. And I just was like laughing with people I didn't know. I felt connected. I mean, like now I know the way I see it now is that when I was drinking the whole time, I feel like I was trying to actually look for a connection with people and with life and with God. But I didn't. I mean, I couldn't put that into words for a long time, but that's what I was looking for, I think, in drinking. It gave me this feeling, even though it was fake and wasn't real, I would feel like everything would calm down and I could just like be and feel like I was like connected with people, whether they were just the people at the bar, whether they were friends. I felt like that. And, my drinking took off really quickly. I consciously remember having this thought, like when I woke up the next day after that night of drinking. And I felt really bad, like physically bad. But I thought to myself, this is what's been wrong. Like in high school, this is what all these kids were doing in high school. They were all going to these drinking parties, which I was too afraid to go to because I was in my church youth group and I just was afraid. I thought they were going to make fun of me. I don't know what I thought, but I decided in my, alcoholic mind, like at 18, like after I felt that way, that this is what I'm going to do. If I can just drink sometimes, I didn't think to myself, I don't think a lot of people do. I'm going to become an alcoholic and like ruin my life and hurt everybody around me. What I thought to myself was like, if I can just do this sometimes, you know what? This is going to be really fun. Like I can meet people. I'm going to go to classes. It's going to be so different than it's ever been for me. And that's what I wanted to happen. What actually happened was that I quickly, I mean, I like it talks about in our book, like I drank because I liked the way it felt. It felt good. I didn't know there was anything wrong with me or that I wasn't going to be able to stop or anything like that. It just felt so good to drink. And I felt so happy when I was drinking that, like, why wouldn't I do it? And, I went from somebody in the beginning of the college where I kind of like, I would like look down my nose at the other kids on my dorm and think, oh my God, they're drinking on a school night. Like that's what I thought at the beginning of school. And by the second year, I was like joining a sorority. I had a different bar that I went to every night of the week. I had my fake ID and it said that I was 5'11", and it was a real license, but it was some other girl. We had found it at a tailgate, and they would hold it up, and like if I could hit my head on it, they would let me in the bar. Like if I could jump high enough, they would let me in the bar. I mean, I love drinking. Like I wouldn't have had the problems I did if I didn't love it. It did. I mean, it did something for me that I don't think it does for other people that are not alcoholic. It made everything okay. It made my life feel bearable. I was just so afraid of everything in the world and up until that point. But with it, like I couldn't live like the way I was drinking. I couldn't like also have a manageable life. I couldn't, and I quickly, my personality, like it talks about, it changed drastically. Because I think for the most part, like when I was growing up, I was a shy person, but I did, like, I was given values that I did, a lot of them believed in my heart. Like I believed that I wanted to be a good person. Like from a young age, I wanted to be a special education teacher, which I was. Like that's what I went to school to be. And I wanted to help people. I had like what a lot of people would consider like good values. And I really wanted to be like that, but I, but once I started drinking, it was out the door. And one of the things that I remember pretty early in my drinking that I rem I think about it, it's not like this drastic, terrible thing that I did. It wasn't nice, but it wasn't like one of the worst things I've done. But I can remember my first or second year into the drinking, I was going to a party, and one of my roommates, she was crying because her tooth hurt. And she wanted to go home and she was scared. She's like, the dentist isn't open. I'm in so much pain. I don't know what to do. Nobody's at home. Can you come back with me? And I was like, no, because I wanted to go to the party. And, that's, it's not a nice thing. It's not the worst thing I've done, believe me. But I remember that as a turning point of like my personality. Like, I would never, that's not how I was before I drank. Like, even as a kid and as a, like a young person in high school, like, I cared about my friends. I cared about things and like, I still went to church when I went to college. Everything went out the window. Like I had to drink, but I didn't know that I had to drink. So anything involving like me getting wasted, like my mind didn't tell me, you're choosing to drink over your friend. My mind told me like, there's nothing I can do for her. Like I'm only young once. I have to go out. This is what we're doing. She'll be fine. I didn't, it was a long time. Like it wasn't until I got into AA and started like really taking a look sober at my drinking and how I drank that I realized that it was all about the drink. My life was only about drinking at the end. Like when my friends, this was still when I was being kind of a social person, if you could call it that, I would go out drinking with them. They would be putting their makeup on and I would be looking at the clock. And I said, oh my God, it's 10:30. Like the last call is going to be like at 1:30. Like there's only this many hours to drink. Like that's what I was thinking. They were thinking about what band is going to be playing there, like who, what boy they're going to see, what are they going to wear, what funny thing's going to happen. Like most of them, and I'm just like, the line is going to be around the corner. I never can get to the front of the line for a drink because I'm like 5 feet tall. Like I never can get up there. So I would start packing little like my miniatures in my purse, because also I knew that the bartenders didn't make the drink. They were like, I thought they were like cheating me in my, like, until I was like 2 years sober, I was like, I don't think they were cheating me. I think they were making the drink strong enough. I just don't think it was strong enough for me. But I thought they were being cheap, so I'd buy more drinks and they weren't putting enough alcohol. So I bring my own little vodka with me and like go in the bathroom and pour it in and make it the way I wanted to. But I mean, that's how I drank from the very beginning. Like for some people, they do move into it a little more, like they're social first. I don't recall being a social drinker. I was a blackout drinker pretty much from the start. Like I was somebody that like not, I wouldn't call myself a fun person to go out with. I could be entertaining sometimes, I think, because I would sing to people and I would do funny things, but like they always had ended up having to take care of me. Like the people that went out with me, it became again all about me. Jenny's crying. Where is Jenny? And we didn't have cell phones, so it's like not like now, like where I could, thank God, because I would be all over Facebook. I don't know what, I'm so glad that there was not like cell phones when I was drinking. I am so glad. Oh my God. But like I would just be like, it would be terrible. But like they couldn't find me, and I a lot of times would hide from them. And that this and I never had any money to drink, so I'd do all these like ex in college. Like I would let them do all these like. Like as experiments, like they would like pay you to like they gave me like they were like injecting like they were trying to test botulism like as a warfare like an antidote for botulism, and they, like they would come to college campuses and be like, sign up for our experiment and we'll pay you. And I was like, okay. So I would like do all these like stuff like that. I sold my bone marrow because I didn't have any money. Like so they would like they don't put you under anesthesia because it's dangerous, so they would just sit there and like. And they, I would go like once a month and I would get $250. Like, and they were like, I have all these scars on my back right now. But anyways, it was, that's when it was fun still to drink. And, that's when it was like, I feel like I was still kind of being normal in some ways. And then I started doing my student teaching at that time. And I just, I know I would come, I'm just thinking about all the stuff I haven't thought about in a while. Like, from my earlier drinking when I would just like show up and I just smelled like smoke from the bar, like, because I wouldn't even wash my clothes. I couldn't get it together to wash my clothes. Like, I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do any of those things. I couldn't like fix my car. Like, my car had no heater. It just, everything was like a mess. And that was like the outside stuff. So I think I can kind of tolerate that looking back. When it got worse, it just got to a place where like I would get very depressed when I drank. I was very depressive. Because I mean, I do tend to lean that way anyway, like naturally, just melancholy. And I would, when I would go out to drink and everything, I would almost always end up crying. I would always end always like, "You hate me, you don't love me," like whoever I was with, like, just, "You hate me, you're not my friend, you don't care about me." Like, it was just like, "I'm not living with you anymore," like just like a pain in the, you know what. So people wouldn't go with me anymore. Like, my roommate, that poor girl that was my roommate in college, ended up being my roommate all the way until I got sober. So I feel sorry for her. But towards like the end, like, you fast forward, like, I was perfectly happy drinking by myself. Like, it was a happier time for me and everybody, really. So I would just have my like bottle of rum and my Diet Coke and my cigarettes, and I would just end up sitting on my balcony in my apartment in Rockville when I got, like, right before I got sober. It overlooked a cemetery, and so I would just sit there and like just sit there and read like Sylvia Plath, like whatever depressing book, and just think like sad things and sing sad songs and be by myself. And I really thought that, I didn't think my roommate, she lived with me for what, like 10 years at that point. She had no idea. I didn't think she knew I was wasted. And I was blacking out every night, like just peeing all over everything. And I mean, finally she's like, "We need to talk." And I was like, "About what?" She's like, "We need to talk about your drinking." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" She's like, "Jenny," she's like, "I've known you." She's like, "You don't think I know that you're wasted when you're, you know, I just got you, put you, you knocked your lamp over the other night. Like, you're so wasted all the time. And, you know, if you don't do something," because I was seeing a therapist, she's like, "I'm gonna call your therapist and tell her how much you're drinking." And I always talk about this, like, I still to this day, I don't know why that terrified me so much. It bothered me so much. Don't tell my therapist, don't tell her. Like, I didn't want, her first, I'll just say her first name, Susanna. That was her, my therapist at the time's first name. Like, they don't want her to know, don't tell Susanna. And the point I was at, like, I would go to the, because I knew something was wrong for a long time. I did, it took me a really long time to connect that my drinking had anything to do with the way my life was going. I just, like, I didn't want that to happen. There were like small moments. I don't think I ever actually heard of AA at that time. But like when my therapist mentioned it, I remember like this loud voice being like, "Then I'll have to stop drinking." And it was just like the worst thought ever. You know, but I just thought that it was because of like some like kind of traumatic things that had happened to me when I was drinking. And I like, that's why I'm drinking. Or like, if I had broken up with my boyfriend, I'm depressed. I have a history of depression in my family. I have a history of mental, like, it was all these other things that, like, that's why I'm drinking so much. When I grow up, I'm not going to do this. Like, I just thought it was just going to stop happening somehow. And, you know, what happened, like, while I was drinking, I did a lot of horrific things. Like, I'm not exaggerating. And like, I would say most of the really mean and nasty things that I did that I had to do amends for were not when I was drunk. They were during the period when I was drinking. They were not when I was drunk. And that's what our, you know, our eighth and ninth step talk about. They don't say like make amends. It says make amends for our self-centered behavior, for living a base life based on self-will. And like, that was my story. Like, I did harm when I was actually drunk. But the bigger things that I really hurt people with, honestly, were when I was like, there was nothing in my system, and I was just miserable and hurt and in pain, and believed everything I thought was true. Like, when I was drinking, every fear, every thought, there was no questioning my thinking ever before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. If I thought it was true, if I think you don't like me, you don't, and I'm going to act like a B word to you because you don't like me. You know, like, it's absolute, there was no questioning it. What I feared was that absolutely the truth. And like, so a lot of very bad things happened. A lot of like violent things happened while I was out there too. but they happened years before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. What happened that brought me to AA was that roommate confronted me. I did tell my therapist, and at this point, I would go to therapy voluntarily, and I wouldn't speak to her in the session, like verbally. Like I would write everything on a paper and hand it to her, and she would talk back to me, and because I just was a mess. I don't know what was wrong. I was like really neurotic, and I told her, and it was the first person I told her I'm drinking a bottle like. About this big of rum every night, and she said, "Don't stop drinking tonight." And she said, "You could have a seizure." And I didn't know that could happen, and that scared me. She didn't tell me I was an alcoholic. She didn't tell me anything like that. She told me to go home, drink, do whatever I would normally do. That she was going to call me at work tomorrow. I was teaching, trying to teach. I was teaching kindergarten. I was showing up there anyway, and she called me at work, and she step by step. She took my insurance. She called our treatment center. And this woman, God bless her, like if she had not done this, I was not at a point in my life like there was nothing manageable about my life, and I know it. Like I couldn't pick up a phone and order a pizza without feeling terrified. I was afraid to open my door. Like the only place I ever drove to at that point, I would get my alcohol and I would drive straight to work, straight home. And then at the end, I couldn't even get up to go to work. I would wake up and I would be shaking so bad from drinking the night before that I would have to call out sick. And she set it all up for me, and they came in a big white van and picked me up and drove me out to like this rehab place out on the Eastern Shore. And my insurance only would cover like a few days, so they detoxed me, and they were like, "You're going to go home and you need to call this number, the area, the inner group, and they'll tell you where to go to meetings." And I was like, yeah. But inside, I was like, no, like, I'm not picking up the phone. Like, I can't make a phone call. Like, I was terrified. When I was leaving there, I didn't know. I knew that when I left rehab, my 2 weeks stint in rehab, I knew that I was drinking too much. I admitted I was an alcoholic, but I didn't know what that really was. And I knew that I was a mess, and I did have like in the first of it talks about hopelessness. I was hopeless, and a woman there that worked there told me, "When's the last time you prayed?" And I couldn't remember the last time I prayed, and I felt at that point that I was had done so many like wrong things that went against everything like in my heart that I just had the idea that I was too bad to deserve God to help me, but I did it anyway. When I was about to leave, this guy they brought the new people in, and this guy had relapsed, and I wasn't going to go to a meeting. And he said, "Well, where do you live?" And I told him, and he's like, "I'm from there." And he drew me a map from my little apartment at the cemetery in Rockville to this AA club called the Delray Club in Bethesda, and there, over there. And if he hadn't drawn that, I would not have gone because I was not picking up that. I was too scared. Like probably if there was the internet, I might have. But it wasn't like that when I got sober. And I went to my first meeting. I walked into the, like, I loved it because there was smoke, but I got there early not to meet people. I got there because I wanted to find where I could sit where nobody could see me. I didn't want to walk in. I didn't want everybody to be sitting in the room, and I would walk in and they would see me and look at me. So I sat down. I got up to leave because everybody was like laughing and talking to each other. And I was like, I can't even fit in here. Like these people are just too happy. Like I did not feel like I belong. I was scared to death, and this girl stopped me, and she was probably about 16 and a half, 17, like young girl, and she's like, "Where are you going? You're new, just stay here." And she introduced me to my first sponsor, and like she, as far as I know, is not sober. She stayed there. She left when she had about 3 months sober, but like if she hadn't been there, she did everything right for me. She sat with me. She would like She didn't, she was only 16, but she'd be like, "Can you come pick me up for the meeting?" Because she needed a ride. So I would pick her up for the meeting. And she would ask me to buy her dinner because she was 16 and she didn't have any money. But she would cuss all the time. Like I just liked her because all the attention was on her. And I was just sitting there trying to be invisible in my winter coat in the spring. And I got this sponsor, and she just told me very clearly what to do. She didn't ask me, kind of. She just was like, I asked her to sponsor. She's like, "When you ask me to sponsor you, it's implicit that I'm going to tell you what to do. And She would just say, "You're going to meet me here. You're going to do this. You do this. Do this. Come here. Read this." And we talked about nothing but step one. She didn't talk about like I would start. I don't have any money. She's like, "Yeah." And when I was drinking, like it was like I didn't think she could hear me because I would be like, "Megan, my bank account is like negative $457, and it is payday, and I don't like I have so many overdraft." And she'd be like, "I know. You need to go pick up Kim for the meeting." And meet me there at the Delray Club, and we're gonna and like, and then finally, I just remember her saying to me, she's like, "Jenny," she's like, "I hear, like, I can hear you." She's like, "That's not, I can't figure that out." She's like, "I'm your sponsor. I don't know what to do about your bank account. I'm here to lead you, to help you stay sober, so that your higher power can help you figure this stuff out." She's like, "That's what we're here to do. We're gonna do these steps. And you are going to find a higher power that is going to solve your problem. That's what it says in here. That's what we're going to do. That's what's happened for me." And she's like, "It's not that I don't care. It's just that I don't know what how that's going to work out. I'm not God." She's like, "I know it's going to work out." But she's like, "But in the meantime, you're not going to sit here and run around like a chicken with your head cut off for 3 hours because you can't do anything about the money. So go to the meeting." And I was like, "Okay." So, you know. I just luckily found it fell into a group of people in AA that just like loved Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's all they talked about. I would go to the meeting. When I was off of work, when I went to work, I would go to two meetings, and I would go to the 6 o'clock meeting. Then when we got to dinner, like I would come back for the 8:30 because I couldn't sleep anyway. I was up to like 2 in the morning every night just thinking about my life, you know. And bit by bit, I started like lifting my head up. We did the steps. I started helping other people. I got a service position. I was not afraid to be have a service position. I was afraid to ask for a service position because I'd have to talk to somebody. You know, and then about a year sober, like my sponsor was just telling me that like I thought she was gonna like pat me on the back because I was so sad. I was feeling sorry for myself about something. I don't know what. And she's just like, "Jenny," and I'm waiting for her to go, "It's gonna be all right." And she says, "You are so self-centered." And she's like, "All you think about is yourself." She's like, "Look at your life now." She's like, "You have so much to give, and you need to find a sponsee by this week." And then she's like, "So I'll see you later." And then she left and went home, and I cried because that's all I did for 3 years was cry in AA. And but I felt like I was like, "How am I supposed to find a sponsee? You can't make somebody. I'm crazy anyway." And then this girl at my work who I'd like connected with, which was unusual for me to like get along with somebody at my work. Like I'm not like at that time I was very shy. And then she comes up to me at work and says, "I think I have a drinking problem, and I don't know I'm telling you this, but I tried to kill myself on Friday." And she became my first sponsee. And I took her to AA like that week. And she's still sober. And you know, from that point on, I've been blessed to like, you know, I found that there was a relief that happened to me. Like that was the only thing that helped me. So at first I would help newcomers because I realized, oh my God, I've been driving this person around. Haven't been upset for like 3 hours. But I was just in so much emotional pain without drinking. Like I would realize like around a year and a half, I started realizing, God, no wonder I drank all the time. Look what I feel like when nothing's even happening. Like nothing wrong is happening in my life, and this is what I feel like. And I mean, I prayed and I tried to meditate at that time in my sobriety. I was very good about praying. Meditating, I would just start thinking about stuff really badly. So I just read instead, and then prayed and tried to see if I could remember the meditation by lunch. That was my sponsor told me to do. But I started like getting relief, and then I ended up like was blessed. Like I've sponsored people consistently ever since then, and it has been wonderful because then I get to like go through the steps again with them. And it, you know, at first it was just to get out of myself, but now I just genuinely like I feel comfortable in my own skin, and I love watching them, and it reaffirms that there is a God when I see their lives change because I know I didn't do it and I know they didn't do it because I met them. You know, and you know, so things started changing for me, like and still largely, it's like the inside of my life has changed. Like I for years was just like, I don't understand. I pray, I'm doing service, I'm doing all these things. Like, why do I feel so bad about myself still? Like, why don't I believe that God is going to help me? Like, I just didn't believe it. And like, I would just try to figure everything out. Like, I had like my biggest character defects, or some of the most glaring, I should say, to me, I don't know about to others, was were like self-loathing, self-pity, you know, just think like jealousy, envy, like a lot around emotional security, because people were my higher power. Like I didn't want to admit that, but like my first sponsor, like it's just like as long as she likes me, I'm okay. And I didn't realize I was doing it, but like I had her, like I just thought because she was so wonderful and she's like in my mind, and she was, that if I was near her and if she approved of me, then I'm okay. But like I could never like, and I would pray, but I never felt like I had a sense of like a God that loves me and that I was okay. And it took me a while. Like it took a lot of pain, and it took a lot of like getting to these places where nothing that I was trying to do on the outside was making it better. Like for a long time, approval would do it for me. Like if I spoke at an AA meeting and people clapped, like, "That's great, Jenny." I was like, "Okay, I'm okay. I'm all right. I'm all right." You know, but I got to these places, inside myself and through things that happened in my life where like I had to have like my higher power. Like there was no, like I, like no amount of calling people, doing service, helping people was going to make it better. Like I had to like find where that connection was, and I really didn't know that it was already in there. Everything was just covered up on top of it, like, you know. And I had a sponsor once that told me, like, you know, nothing in our books talks about adding anything to you. It talks about removing what's wrong. She's like, you're already perfect. She like changed my sobriety. She was like, you're already what God wants you to be. It's just that all this crap you have on top of it is like hiding it. She's like, we're never supposed to be perfect, but like the essence of who you are is good. Like God made you, and like I believe that. And like it was like my first sponsor got very sick, and like I was heartbroken when I stopped working with her, but it was probably one of the best things that happened in my sobriety. And it happened naturally. We didn't have a falling out. She got sick. She actually eventually passed away. But I had to like start really relying on that prayer and meditation. Like the things, even when people were like giving me the feedback or the things that I was looking for, that I had been like that since I was a child. Like, as long as you think I'm okay, then I'm okay. I'll make myself be whatever I think you want me to be, because then I know that I'm okay. Because by myself, like I felt like I was nothing. I'm not worth anything. And I don't know, like it makes me sad to think about that now, that like I thought that way about myself. And you know, things started to change in my sobriety again, and all of a sudden it was just like, God, like there's this, you know, this really works. And like I'm so grateful that like that's the biggest thing that's come out of AA and continues to grow, is this like that there's this thing inside me that no matter what happens, like I know that I'm gonna be okay. I might not be happy, I might be sad, I might have like really hard feelings, like really difficult things, but I'm like, and I never had that before, that things are going to be okay, that I'm really like, and it talks about in our six and seven, in the 12 and 12 and six and seven, about like not having like a lack of anchorage. Like, so I put everything into, am I thin enough? Am I pretty enough? Do I have enough money? Do I have a boyfriend? Am I going to get married? Do I have all this stuff? If I have all these things, then that makes me an okay person. Whether I wanted to do that or not, that's what I was doing. And those are all like, they come and go. It doesn't matter. I could like hit the lottery and then blow it all. Like it does, like none of those, if I'm holding on to how I look, I'm screwed. Like I'm like, eventually I'm going to be, if I'm lucky, I'm going to live to be like 95, and I'm not going to look like a young person anymore. You know what I mean? And I don't now, but like I was so caught up in that, really believing that that was, those are the things that I needed to look at. And the permanent things are like, how do I treat others? Like, how do I feel about God? Like God, like my higher power is never going anywhere. Like it's constant, you know, and it's a real thing that I actually can feel. And I never thought that was going to happen. I believe that there was a higher power because I was sober. I did not believe that a higher power gave two, you know, what's about me and about what I wanted, about what was in my heart, about my life. And now I look at my life and I'm just like, a series of things have happened. I'm going to talk about a little bit, over the last 3 years, that like it's just opened up this connection with my higher power that I never thought was possible. And so, my sobriety is going beautifully, just happy. And after like a million years, I was like, I'm never going to date anybody. And I tell my sponsors, like, I don't want to hear about not dating somebody, because I did not date anybody, not on purpose, but because I was just too heady and had some stuff to work through until I was what, like 17 years or so. Like, I did not date anybody forever. It wasn't on purpose. It was, I was scared of everybody, so I got married 5 years ago. I'm a late bloomer, as I told my mom, late bloomer. And so, I met my husband. He's also an AA. We started, we were friends first. We started dating. And then we decided we would go and try to do in vitro to have a baby. That failed for a long time. Then COVID hit, and then they shut it all down. I was very angry. Then I got pregnant, and I had my first son, May of 2021, right in the middle of COVID. When my baby was 5 weeks old, my husband wouldn't wake up. I called his sister because I had the baby. I said, he won't get out of bed. I think he's dehydrated. Please take him to the hospital. They found a tumor at the size of a baseball in his lungs. And then he had throat cancer. They found out 3 weeks later. So here I am, like, what the hell? Like, what is happening? And thank God I had that baby, because like I but what ended up happening through all this, like, it was very scary. We weren't sure if he was going to live. He's okay now. He's been cancer-free for almost 2 years now. Like, it is actually a miracle. Like, he went through some treatments. But while this was all happening, I had the most beautiful conversations with my husband. Like, we talked about God and death and what we're going to, like, ways that we would have never talked about these things, I don't think, naturally. Our son is the most cheerful, like, he is the most cheerful, easygoing, outgoing boy. Like, it's so funny because I'm so shy. Like, my husband's a little more social, but I'm just like, oh God, people, people. And he's just like, hi guys, I have a puppy for Holland. Like, he's just so like outgoing. And I had this beautiful baby, and then my husband started getting better, things are going good. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, I just want to have another baby. So we did it again, and we had another baby. And then things were going really good. And then probably in April of this past year, I started, like, not to be too much detail, but I started bleeding in the parking lot, and I ended up in the hospital. That happened like two or three more times that I was hospitalized. And I was having a really difficult pregnancy. And so when I was like 28 weeks pregnant, my baby was born. So that's super early. So day two, his lungs both collapsed. He had to be intubated. His brain was bleeding. It was like really, it was terrifying. That was probably the scariest day of my life. Was that day when the doctor came in the room, and this nurse just sat with me for like an hour. And he just came home September 5th, and he's off oxygen. He's doing well now, but like, the reason I say all this is because these things have been really difficult. But what I can say is that I am so grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, people don't get to have what we have here. I did not go through any of this by myself. My sponsees would call me. They would come to my house. They brought me groceries. Like, people in AA would bring me meals. They would call and pray for me. We had like because of AA, and because of AA, I have these wonderful relationships with my coworkers at work. I have people, like, my one coworker is from Kenya, and she had people in her village in Kenya, like their church, they are praying for us. Like, and like, some of the most beautiful moments in my life have been in the last 3 years, as hard as this has been, and I knew through it, like I said, I got this to have this experience that, like, this is terrible, and this might, like, the stuff that might happen might break my heart, but I know that I'm going to be okay. Like, I know that I will go on, And I know that it, like I said, like that's the biggest thing, one of the biggest things AA has given me. I'm a person who like I couldn't cope with like taking my car to the mechanic when I was, when I got sober. Like it was too hard. Like I would cry. If my car broke down in the morning, I was like a puddle, like sober, like, oh my God, my car's broken. What am I gonna do? And like now it's like difficult things can happen and like I don't have to go it through myself, but I also like I just think for a lot of my life, I thought that my higher power was just like, if you're not good enough, then screw you, Jenny. And now that I know that, like, even before this, I have a higher power that cares about me on a personal level. Like, I have a personal relationship, and I'm sharing that because I just didn't think it was possible. And like, I got to hear people say that it was possible, and it gave me hope. And like most of my life, I wouldn't that like when I got to AA, I don't think that I was thinking that what I want to happen in my life is to have like my goal wasn't like, I hope I have this great relationship with God. My goal was like, I hope I don't like, I need to stop feeling like crap and get a boyfriend. Like, that's re pretty much that was it. And lose some weight. That was my goals, my big, and I have very little plans. And God has much bigger plans for all of us, for me. Like, I'm not, unique to this. And that was enough, I'm thinking that was another thing, old idea I had in sobriety. I've had a lot of like old ideas I've had to let go of in sobriety that I learned that I developed in sobriety. And one of them was that like, I don't know what I thought. I just thought that like, I just didn't think that having higher power, like I didn't think that was it, to say the least. The person that walked into the room, like I become so cynical before I got to AA. I was nothing like the little girl that I was when I was, like first born. I thought people, I remember thinking like I truly thought that like when I would walk down the street when I was still drinking, if people smiled at me, I thought they were either stupid because like what you have to be dumb to be happy in this world. I really like this is a real thought that I had. I was miserable. Or I thought they were smiling to like make me feel bad. Like they didn't know me, but like that they were like smiling on purpose to make me feel bad. And I've had a like, I've had like a lot of difficult things happen in the last couple of years, but I've had a lot of wonderful things happen in my sobriety too. And like, I actually think like I had a lot of wonderful things happen during those last couple of years too, to be honest. But like I said, the biggest things that have happened have been like what's happened inside of me, because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love it. I'm very grateful that there's Zoom, because like especially over the last, when the baby came home, he was still in oxygen, like he has lung disease, like I can't he's a and I couldn't like I could get to a meeting on Zoom at least. Now he's doing better and he was in the hospital a couple weeks. He had COVID, terrible. So we were at Children's Hospital, but he's okay. But there's always going to be like that's the biggest thing currently that's going on with me that I'm trying to turn over is that like every time he like coughs, I'm like my whole the adrenaline goes through my whole body. I'm like, what's going to happen? It's interesting that like the things that are the most important to me are the last things I want to turn over to God, and they're the first things I should like. I sit there and like just sit. I'll just think. I'll just look at him. I just won't sleep. I'll just stare at his chest and make sure And it's like. That, I mean, I obviously I go through the motions of praying, but I haven't real like I'm struggling with that, with turning all of that over to a higher power. Like that's a big thing I'm struggling with. I went back to work this week, so that's been pretty crazy. But it's good. I'm a pre-K teacher now. I teach 4-year-olds. They're really cute. I have a wonderful new teacher that's working with me. I'm just I mean, everything that's good in my life, I accredit to AA. Because AA has made me like, it's taught me, how to act my way into a new way of feeling. Like for a long time, it was just like, this is how you're supposed to act, Jenny, and I didn't even know how I was supposed to act. but I could at least pretend that I always like kind of joke with my sponsees that it wasn't probably until like maybe I want to say like in the last 10 years that at work, when I walked down the hall, what my thought would be when I saw a coworker was, there's Nancy. I should ask her how her weekend is. That's an other-centered thing to do. And Nancy's thought was probably, I wonder how Jenny's weekend was. You know, like just not, like actually can't wondering how it was. And to me, it was like for a long time, it's like I have to go through this, like, oh, I should feel this way. So let me try to feel this way. And but then eventually it does catch up. And like I do actually like, you know, for me, like some quicker than others. Like I'm a slow learner, like for a lot of times with relationships and things like that, like that's how my self-centeredness is. It's taken me a really long time to actually like I know how to act well because I'm a people pleaser, so that helps me with that. Like I don't want people to like think badly of me, so I'll act the right way. It's not that I'm perfect at it, but that makes it easier because it's I have a self-seeking motive. But like I do genuinely care about people that I don't know even now, which is like I was like I don't understand that like when I came in, you know. So, anyways, I'm gonna stop because I'm starting to ramble. I know it's a little bit sooner than end of the meeting, but I don't want to just start talking about nothing. So, thank you so much. Thanks for letting me share.